You're live on Purple Haze Radio. Cannabis Lifestyle Radio.
Good morning, everybody. And you know what it is when I get up in the morning and I'm like, oh my God, what do I have to do today? And I was like, oh, I got guests, and I got some real cool guests today. And so I was like, wow, I can't wait till I roll into the office. Today I get to be interviewing and having on, which is an awesome pleasure, two wonderful individuals, Bonita and Bo Money, who is with Indica, which we'll talk a little bit about it. Definitely one of my favorite strains, but she's definitely not a strain of weed. And we got Freeway Rick Ross, legendary man in itself. And we're going to get into like what he is and who he was and what he's been through into his life. But let's start off by saying what's up. How you guys doing today?
All right. What's up, y'all?
Yeah, we're good. Thank you. I'm awesome. Hey.
It's always nice to be living in Cali. So both of you guys, are you guys both Cali your whole life? Or did you live in Cali most of your whole life?
Yeah, my mom moved out when, I'm from Texas, but we moved out here when I was around 3, maybe 4 years old.
Okay.
So I'm Cali. 110 freeway.
Shout out to the people that get stuck on all that traffic on the 110 freeway.
Every day, all day.
They should call
it the parking lot.
It should be, right? Because it is.
It was on fire the other day. Did you see that? No, that was 105.
That was the 105.
But still, they're adjacent. They're cousins. You know what I mean? They're right there next to each other.
Yeah.
And then
some people lost their life there too. So
yeah, that was terrible.
Send our condolences out.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the only time when, like, you know, when I get up to like a situation of traffic, I'm always thinking that too. If someone's hurt or anything like that, I mean, I'm like always thinking at first, like I'm like, you know, God be blessings. And they get passing, it's some dumbass who dropped this mattress, and I get pissed off at that point.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? But until that point, I'm always like trying to like not be that douchebag, like, I can get somewhere, like someone's whole lives might be changed at this point.
Yeah, it was. And not just the victims of the accident, but you know, there was people on the freeway for like 12 and 14 hours.
The food truck opened up.
Yeah.
The food truck opened up.
Thank God.
The food truck opened up, went big. They sold all kinds of stuff.
No lines.
Yeah, man. I mean, people were stuck in there. Like, they couldn't turn around since like 5 in the morning, 5, 7 in the morning. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's fucking
crazy,
wild.
Man.
So, Bo, what, tell us about Indica.
It's the National Diversity and Inclusion Cannabis Alliance. And Indica was formed last year. Basically, when we knew that LA was going legal, recreational,
okay,
and we knew that we needed a social equity program, and we just knew that we needed ownership and we needed equity for people of color in this industry.
And is it something that you've been passionate about your whole life? What made you say, oh, I want to put this group together? What was the main drive?
Well, I think I've always been an activist for many causes, but I think with cannabis, you know, like any other major industry, people of color have always been shut out and left out.
Sure.
And I just knew that we would never see anything like this in our lifetime again.
Okay.
As far as just such a big, you know, green rush or, you know, so.
Do you see that? Now, I've heard in the green rush that as far as other industries, let's say around the world that there is, that they're saying that cannabis for women, okay, has probably one of the highest equality, like men versus women, as being like CEOs and leaders.
Absolutely.
In a major industry. Shout out to all those women doing their thing in the cannabis industry. Fuck yeah, that's awesome. You know what I mean? And you got to have that flavor in the mix, because everybody enjoys this wonderful plant.
Well, you know, when it was on the underground, underground has a way of opening itself up, you know.
Okay.
No gender, no race.
Sure.
You know, it's all about the money.
It's all about the money.
So it's easy for women or men.
Sure.
or blacks or whoever,
sure,
you know,
okay,
to get in and get involved. And what I didn't want to happen, and what Bo was doing, is that she wanted the same thing to be in effect when it goes legal. But what seems to be happening is that now it's not necessarily color in so many ways, but who has the money?
Okay.
And you
think that the money, if the color doesn't have the money to match up, then they're going to get boxed out?
Is absolutely.
That what you, okay.
Absolutely.
Really? Interesting.
And that's what's happening. I mean, it's already happening.
And are you saying all, not just like, Spanish, black, this, different colors, or specifically black?
Black and brown.
More so than anybody, because you know, and people might say, but blacks had it the worst coming in this country.
For sure,
the only race that ever come over that didn't come on their own free will.
Okay, absolutely.
Was set free and didn't get anything to get started. You know,
absolutely.
Me and one of my friends was talking the other day, and we was talking about how people say, you know, that blacks should suck it up and pick themselves up by their bootstrings. But, you know, when our people were set free, they didn't have boots.
Yeah.
So how could you string them up? And we're kind of like the offspring of that. You know, when you look back, we're only so many years out of slavery. Most of the things that we were taught by people who was just recently been released from slavery. So we don't have the business
acumen.
And people forget about that. Like when I was a kid growing up in Ohio, I was always like the part white, part black kid that lived in, you know, my mom was over a white woman.
You're part black? Blackest.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I had like the big afro, the white nose.
Know that.
But I was just black enough that like Ronald Reagan was like, we integrated school. So they picked me up at 6:30 a.m. because they were like, he's just Negro enough, you know, for the white school. So they picked me up. I was like the only kid getting free lunch. It was like fucked up. You know what I mean? I had like a big crazy afro. And like, they'd be like, comb your hair. I'm like, I did. I combed my hair. And they were like, the shit just go right back into it. So I didn't, you know.
That's a good one.
But I was trying to say, I was telling him like, and so I lived in the projects then, but then we got the Section 8 home. So then we got to move into like the nicer area, but then they were like literally come around the house like, hey, we're having a Klan meeting, you know, at the church tonight, you know, we got punch and cookies and shit. You're like, it's crazy. And then my friend's aunt, we went to talk with her, and she was like 106 years old, and this is like in the early like 1980s, right?
Wow.
And like she was an actual slave, and like talking to her is like, so people forget. Like in my girl, my wife is she's a black lawyer. She's a beast. You know, she never smoked a joint in her life, and she like drives a beautiful, nice Maserati. You know, but she's scared. Like if she sees a cop, like, and she's like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. She never smoked weed in her life. She never would take a sip of an alcohol, nothing. But she's like, and she's light skinned, the whole thing, right? You know.
You can't understand unless you're black.
You never know what it's like to drive
down the street until you're black.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like people said,
I will say, and I've actually, I feel very of the few, let's say, that gets to even experience or be part of the situation. But I actually had a good friend of mine, who lived in South Central. And lived in, you know, the 50s and 60s in real fucking rough.
That's South Central? South Central.
Yeah, so in the 50s and 60s. Right? And if you were wearing red, or if you were Crip, or you were Blood, you're having all these crazy wars and things that are going there. But if you were somebody, forget about it, even if you were black going down that street and you're not part of that street, you can really be put in a very dangerous situation.
Somebody got killed there last night.
Yeah, so I
100%, right?
I heard the gunshots. Yeah, we heard the gunshots.
I have been experienced. Went with a homie who grew up there his whole life, and we bonded a lot. We used to play chess all the time, stuff like that. And he learned chess from being in jail, and he fucking would always beat my ass and shit.
Me too.
Because he played a dude in his cell who was a chess master. So you tell me about how a lot of times people to get extra food, this, whatever type of shit, like that was one outlet chess playing.
It was a hustle.
Is a hustle, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's a hustle. They hustle. Yeah. So they hustle chess.
So he had what he called the jailhouse defense, which he always beat my fucking ass and shit for. I can't tell you how many times, but we became such good friends. He always told me about when he grew up in the streets and how it was all of his friends' mothers were crack addicts and this, and the kids in the streets and being part of the gangs and all that stuff. So he actually brought me down there.
Yeah.
And I spent a couple of days in those streets, you know, and they were all saying, like, because I was the white guy, and we came down in my fucking nice car, the people yelling feds in the fucking streets and shit like that, and all kinds of crazy stuff. But I hung out with some of the coolest motherfuckers, and the thing was, is like, they would tell me, and I'd seen how, like, the cops, you're sitting in front of your own fucking house, just chilling, and this is your own fucking home, and cops will pull up and pull you off your porch and this and do type of shit and throw drugs even if it isn't, just to arrest them and do
I've been there, you know what I'm saying,
and it's just like
that was called the war on drugs. It's called the war on drugs,
but still is to this day.
See these scars in my face?
Yeah,
they call that police brutality.
Sure.
You know, where you're handcuffed and then all of a sudden the dog goes crazy and start biting you and the cops start hitting you in the head with flashlights and billy clubs and you're like, what is going on here? Is it the 4th of July or what?
For sure.
That's horrible.
For sure.
But let me go back to the slavery.
Yeah.
That slavery word. You know, what I'm finding, which is pretty disturbing now that we're going into the social equity phase of licensing here in LA County, I'm coming across all these different consulting groups now that are selling black and brown people, and I just want to...
Wait, say this again.
Yeah, I just want to make this public.
What does that mean, though?
What that means is that because it's very valuable, okay, to have a partner that is a person of color that qualifies under the social equity plan.
And what does qualify? I mean, hypothetically, what does someone qualify?
Tier one would be low income.
Okay.
Would come from a zip code that would qualify for the social equity plan, which is generally most of the zip codes in South LA.
Okay.
And then also to have a cannabis conviction. That qualifies you under tier one, which means gets you priority for licensing in the city of Los Angeles.
Okay.
Now, tier two, you don't have to have a conviction. You just have to be low income and come from those zip codes. Okay, so what that means, and it's a 2-to-1
this
ratio.
This is crazy.
Yes, so it's a 2-to-1.
This is like crazy.
Did you ever
right
hear
now.
This or you never
no,
heard this, Tila?
Of course
Tila?
Not.
All right, cool. So this is great. Tell us.
So what that means is that social equity applicants that qualify, they get priority to licensing. So ultimately with the dispensaries, which would be retail, 2-to-1. It's 2-to-1.
Sure.
So for every one general license issued, there has to be 2 issued to social equity applicants.
Wow. And how many have they issued? And how many have to be issued in California? Because that seems like that's a
it's
lot
not
of
not California. It's the city of Los Angeles.
Oh, just to see. All right. How many are in the city of Los Angeles?
Okay,
like dispensaries, let's
right now
say.
There's probably, pre-ICO? A little over 150?
So
they have to issue
now. How many
have
to be social equity or how many?
Double that.
In addition. So okay, I got you.
Okay.
Yeah, you know,
so that's just for retail. Now, for cultivation, which that's coming up now. Phase two is just, it's non-retail. So it's going to be cultivation, manufacturing, and distribution. So that's a 1-to-1 ratio. So for every one general, they're going to have to issue, you know, one for a social equity applicant. But we get actually priority. So.
Now get into the part that's the bad part, because it seems
okay, so
like you're leading into
yeah,
this.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that now all these consulting groups have popped up out of nowhere. There's just tons of them now that were never around before, that never cared about diversity, never cared about social equity.
Oh, I got you.
Never cared about people
and
of color being in the industry.
And now all of a sudden they're championing
the
black man.
Yes, social equity, diversity, and let us help you. And what they're doing basically is they are selling black and brown people to investors.
Okay.
For licensing.
Okay.
That is some scandalous.
It's gross.
No,
I'm pissed.
But okay, and I understand that. But
they're probably getting the shittiest deals too. Happy to get a little cheese.
Well, I don't know about that, but let's just put it in this perspective though.
How do you
feel about the person taking that though? From the black position, the person that is it upsetting the people that are taking this from the white guy that's putting you up as a pawn, let's say, and you're okay with it? Or I mean, what happens in that situation?
Well, first of all, most social equity applicants don't even know they're being sold.
Okay.
And this is why I'm creating this awareness.
I get you. So they're actually falling into this.
That's what I'm
thinking,
saying. They don't get no bread. I'm trying to explain.
Right, exactly. Why it should go to the social equity applicant. Why are they brokering these people? It's modern day slavery people.
Yeah. What it is, because they give that little
cool,
tiny
it's
crumb.
Not okay.
Because what it is, I remember my first check, I thought it was $25,000. As far as I'm concerned, I was a millionaire. You know, because I never had money before. So someone dangled a little bread over your face.
Right.
Come to find out, my first check was $250,000. I was like, oh, shit. I asked him, do I go to a check cashing place? Well, I don't even know, because I never even had a bank account. It was like that real. So, you know, it's something to count. So I grew up where my mom would literally be like, look, like, Timmy, we have $3 for the next 2 weeks. Like, I fucking ate so many noodles and shit as a kid or whatever, like, all that. And so, like, so when you dangling something like that over there, like, hey, here's, you know, here's $50,000. $50,000? Are you crazy that someone's been on such a fixed income and had nothing?
Oh, yeah.
And they've been able to take a trip real for real and nothing like
and
that.
Never thought about having a business.
Ever.
Right. You talking about I'm going to be part of a
own
business?
Something too?
Yeah, come on.
You're like, what? They might own a fraction, a little tiny little wiggle, like something they can't even vote on nothing. Like, you barely get to use a restroom in the damn spot and they putting a name on it.
And that's totally.
I'm glad you're doing this. This is
and that's
shit.
Totally not what social equity is for.
No, it's the opposite.
Sure. It's supposed to be so that we can create.
Drop the mic on that shit. She is not fucking around. Like, she's serious about this right
she's
now.
She's like, damn, oh shit. You gotta catch that on live.
It should be a situation where people in the community are going to be employed now. You know,
absolutely.
Because when I come home from prison, there were all of these dispensaries, but nobody was from the neighborhood. You know, it was from people from.
Sure.
Even other
in the neighborhood, there was nobody from the neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? Like, what happens in the neighborhood?
They didn't have dispensaries.
Or they didn't even give them.
They didn't have dispensaries.
Are they worried about a lot of issues around that, or what do you think the reasoning is?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, the law targeted blacks in the war on drugs. It was a war against blacks. You
absolutely.
Know, if you do all the numbers,
sure,
you'll see that if black, a white, Hispanic go to prison, the black guy gets more time because he can't be rehabilitated.
Sure.
You know, as far as the judges were concerned.
I get you.
So when you look at all of the things that have happened to blacks into the community, it wouldn't be no wonder why they were like, I don't want to get in dispensary business, a trap.
I'm saying it's scary. Sure.
It's
yeah,
a trap.
Like, it's 100% trap.
You mean I got to go sign my name on a thing and say, I smoke marijuana? No, sir.
No,
especially
sir,
the ones
sir.
Who had jobs,
sure,
you know.
Sure, yeah. Sure,
they
sure.
really no, wasn't going to do it.
Let me ask
so
you.
So they kept the black market going.
Let me ask you, Rick. So, you know, you're obviously very legendary for, you know, doing what you... What
cocaine.
For cocaine.
Yes.
You know, and what age did you start doing
19.
This? 19 years old.
Yes.
And was it because of, like you said, being trapped into, like... Because that's what...
Poverty.
That's what I noticed. When I was running. In that world, it was sad because you saw how many people in those streets, because of the environment that's kept them down... It is very depressing. It's very hard for them, for a lot of those people to see, like, oh, I can get out of this life or I can have something, because there's so much crime, killing, this. It's fucking dangerous. You know what I mean? Was it you were trapped in that environment you felt? Or
absolutely,
you just, like,
absolutely. I was totally illiterate until I was 28 years old in prison.
Wow, until 28?
Yeah, I taught myself how to read
get
in
here.
Prison.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So when you're in that situation, you feel hopeless, you know.
Sure.
You can't get a job if you wanted to. Now, the thing that most people miss is that I've always been a hard worker.
Okay.
Working is something that
sure.
That's the first thing I thought about you. Was like, there's no way you can achieve what you've achieved without already being you could be a boss at anything, because it's like,
no
you
question.
Know the formula of being a true, like, mm-hmm. to be able to organize, drop, you know what I mean, manage,
working
handle,
18, 20
open,
hours
open
a day,
door, doors, all this shit. I'm not seeing the drug dealer. I'm like, this motherfucker's a old businessman.
No,
and
right.
then you know what I did? Hey, I saw your six steps, dude. I'm on that shit.
You on it?
Come on, dog. I'm saying, we're going to get together. I'm that next level Negro, dog.
Okay.
I'm saying, I saw the six steps you got. I was like, fuck, that's some real shit. You got to get that list prioritized every day. Because I'm not going to be forgetting. You can see me. You can be all hyped up. I'll be like, oh, Rob. I mean, you know, I get up early. I'm up hiking at like at 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
I'm up hiking. My girl gets up around 5 miles.
I beat you by an hour. I get up at 4.
So you're a beast. So yeah, you're a beast. I'm doing my thing. You know what I mean? But so I'm all hyped up sometimes, but then I get stoned and my list went from doo doo doo. And then I'd be forgetting about it. You know what I'm saying?
Ooh.
And I read your shit. You're like, man, you got to get a good rest, get your exercise on, have your mind right. You know
no
what I mean?
Doubt.
Otherwise, you can't
no
even
doubt.
I see dudes like a straight
vegan.
Guy.
I'm a vegan now.
Wow.
30 years.
Yeah. See,
30 years.
I was vegetarian for a long time.
30 years.
I was.
So on the Stoner Rewind, you're starting at 19. You're like, I want to get into the business.
No,
what,
I didn't want
to
get
no,
into
what,
business. I was.
Andrew's a Jew, by the way.
I'm
so everything's business with that dude.
No, Andy wants to tell your story, right?
I was thrown into the business.
All right, so tell me how that goes down. Tell me. Explain
man,
to me what's
I'm
up.
I'm sitting on my porch one day, right, and I just got out of jail.
Okay.
For Grand Theft Auto.
At 19.
Yes, and
okay.
I was like, wow.
What kind of whip did you try to take, just out of curiosity?
I had about 8.
Okay.
I had a chop right. shop.
Okay.
I had
okay.
got my own chop shop.
Okay,
you know
businessman. Businessman.
Chop shop.
Can't help
fucking
it.
19.
Yes.
Okay.
So the cops raided my shop, and my mom got me out. I'm out on bail, and I'm like sitting on the porch like, wow, I can't steal cars no more. What am I going to do for a living? And one of my friends called me and he was like, man, I got the new thing.
Oh,
so
shit.
So I go to his house and he lay it on the table, and I had saw cocaine in the movies before. And now, I was like, so, wow, yeah, so you this see is my it. Chance to be super fly.
Now, who? one of your boys.
Yeah.
So let me get you.
I love super fly.
Yeah. Who don't?
And
who
pop,
don't?
When I saw that cocaine, it popped back in my mind. Super fly.
And was your boy already doing weight, or was he just
nah,
like
he was a small timer?
But he's like, yo, check this shit out. Try it. Did you try like, it at that point?
Were he was
you
like, oh, let me see. On the elephant.
Okay.
He was
okay.
like a pimp on the elephant.
Yeah. You got the pimp on the elephant. So you get after already having a chop shop and what seems like a pretty fucking solid, you know, side hustle or hustle. You know what? And then he says, okay, we got this thing.
And I had a crew too.
Okay.
You have to.
Okay. Okay, but I don't think Andrew knows about you being a tennis player all your life. I don't know much about it. I want to know.
He has an Agassi look, dude. He does have that real Agassi kind of like swagger.
Hey, Ricky went pro. Yeah. He was that good.
I can tell. He's got tennis.
Oh, shit. Look in the front of the beamer, dude. I got a tennis striker right now. I'll be hitting against the wall. I ain't good. Like, I do my shit. I swear to God, I did this morning.
I love it.
Yeah. I play tennis and I got scholarship offers. But
wow.
I couldn't read.
Wow.
So they were like, wow. You're not going to college, buddy.
Now, let me ask you something. When you started getting faced with that situation, and there's like, you have this opportunity to go forward, did anything in you think like, maybe get somebody to help me teach me how to read then or no?
No.
Or was it just not even in your head at all or no?
The first thing you got to do is the person has to know that they need it.
Sure.
And that's one of the problems that we're having right now with the black community is that they don't know that they should be studying and that they should learn because...
Really?
No, we've been programmed.
Wow.
I mean, if you listen to the black radio stations...
Wow.
We've been programmed
wow.
to believe that you're dumb.
That's not right.
You're a thug.
By your own black stations? Are you
really? We're not owned by blacks. Come
what
on.
Do you mean? Come on, Viacom, Clear Channel.
I feel. I understand.
They don't own the channel.
Big boy. He don't own nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah,
sure.
Big boy has no say so.
You get
power.
A big check.
That's
wow.
it.
Wow.
Yep, that's it.
And,
that's
and
fucked up.
So when you have this, the voice of the community becomes people who play like they're drug addicts.
Okay.
Even if they're not, you know.
Okay.
So check this out. This is some fucked up shit. This is how scandalous it is. Remember I told you
scandalous.
I was Dakota kid, right? I was like just black enough so they can fill
scandalous.
That quota. So I didn't scare the other white folk, you know what I mean? At the, you know, because they weren't having no black kids come to this other white school. Because it was literally, my town was like, John Legend and I went to high school together also.
Yeah.
But like, it was like the north side and
so
the
right
south side.
Right by Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, all day. I was in Springfield.
I've been to Springfield.
Yeah. It was not sexy like way back then.
I stayed in a hotel there one time.
They failed me. I failed 6th grade and I failed 7th grade.
Wow.
We talked about this.
Who the hell fails 2 grades? You know what I'm saying? They were like, we got to keep him here. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Like, cause they were like, he's so white, everyone just call him Irish. And I never knew I was part black until my mom, I was 11 years old, and she was like, get your black ass in your room. I was like, what'd you say? And then with my daughter.
I heard that all my life.
She was always like, never have a baby. And like she ended up dying of obesity because she was just so like that race thing was just so heavy on her, you know, it was like such a bull thing.
And it's bad for everybody.
Bad.
You're right. Racism is bad for everybody.
And so when my ex-wife got pregnant, I called her and was like, oh yeah, you're gonna be a grandma, this and that. And she was like, oh, all upset. And my nana calls me. She's like, Timmy, you sitting down? You're part black. The baby might come out black. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. You don't give a fuck. Like, this is so crazy. This is so blowing my mind. Like, you're trying to tell me.
Man,
my
you need to write a book, man.
I know. She's like,
hey,
you
need to write a book.
I was like,
Tim.
You've been sick all these years for this. Like, you've been so upset and gaining all this weight and doing all this kind of stuff. And you've been so scared that, like, I'm going to be mad at you. Like, I've been thinking. I got validation now. I've been acting like I'm black my whole damn life. You know what I mean? I was like, way back breakdancing and shit. You need to write a book, man. You know, I was going to ask you. Could you run the same time as like with Jameika Thompson? You know the Queen Pin?
Yeah, I know her.
Yeah. So she took me to church not too long ago. Let me see. You go to church with her. Let me tell you, God. I'm friends with Mosley, her son Anthony. I went to church with her, and me and my girl we went. And I was like, you can go to black church, right? Because my girl's from Seattle. You know, she's black. She's like, you know, it's a difference. We were there. So it was like, it started. We was there at like 2:30. I was like, God damn it. I'm one more. I can't hold no one else's hand, please. You know what I mean? But Jamie, you know, she's such a sweetheart and shit. Her story is crazy.
Yes.
They came and souped her up at my friend's, he was getting his like middle school graduation. the feds came and robbed her and came and swooped up there. They knew she was going to show up.
Wow.
I mean,
really?
She was like, yeah, she was like, she was the most powerful like woman cocaine drug dealer in Los Angeles,
really?
Supposedly.
Yeah, I knew her. I knew her husband before he got killed. Yeah, he was a friend of mine.
And he was, that dude was he was gnarly.
I don't know her. How old is she?
She's probably 50 years old, 55 years old or something like that. I'm not really sure.
Really? Okay.
So you started getting into it. You started having a crew. How long were you running the game essentially for?
I was in like 8 years.
Eight years before you got caught.
Yep.
Okay. And was it just year after year? It just really grew and grew.
Yes.
And
every month it grew.
And did it get to a point where you almost felt like at times maybe I should slow down, maybe I should stop?
Not until the end.
Okay.
And that's what I was telling you, that you have to know that you should be doing something.
Okay.
You know, if you don't know, you should be doing something.
And you think if you would have truly had some kind of influence that really guided you in a different direction, even if it was midway or whatever, and said, yo, man, listen, this is not the right way in this, and really, like, you could see that?
Yeah.
You think it would have changed?
But, you know,
no?
most people don't encourage drug dealers not to sell drugs. You know, most people encourage it.
I got you. No, I got you.
Because they look at, America really is a hypocrite, because we love movies like Superfly, Scarface,
all of it,
Carlito's Way.
Yeah, Carlito Way,
Goodfellas, everything. What is everyone? Some of our greatest films are that.
Yeah,
yes.
The Godfather. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you say that you're against drugs and this and then you support those type of movies that promote that type of a lifestyle, then you've been a hypocrite, in my opinion. That's my personal opinion, and it might not be worth a dime, but...
No, of course it is.
I'm saying it.
Your opinion is worth something, of course, man.
To me.
Andrew came in with that straight white guy shit. I know he don't care what you said. He was we agree with you, brother.
And, no, it's not even that. It's the truth, because everybody... First of all, regardless of whether it was illegal or not, you had a lot of jobs, didn't you?
Absolutely. I hired a lot of people.
You know,
you did
help a lot of people in a situation that could have never come up, right?
Well, it's the same thing that's happening right now. A lot of people count on the illegal marijuana market. You know, it's people that actually pay their rent, send their kids to school, and everything with this illegal market. And when you take that away from them...
You know, people don't even understand this. I remember the hippies up north, they were like voting against the weed thing forever. And I was like, why y'all, you know what I mean? Don't you want weed to be legal? And they're like, no, it's going to fuck it up bad. And already they're making a trade for all these damn licenses. Like people that have businesses they've already been doing. Now you got licenses. You got to have this license for grow. You got to do this and that. Things, and you have to put all this money up.
And the prices they're putting on it. That's what's ridiculous.
That's what's crazy.
And how you got to fill out. I mean, why it's not just like a regular.
It don't make no sense.
I want to open up an auto body shop. And you go in, you fill out a regular application.
No, we need 50 stacks. And then you won't even get it back, possibly.
It's non-refundable.
Yeah,
it's $10,000 per application.
Like, I don't want to pay $12.95 non-refundable.
Tilo,
you know what I mean?
Tilo, think about this right now, right? West Hollywood, for the lounges, you know, where we applied just as well. Okay.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You and Mike.
Okay. A bunch of us did. Over 320 people
applied
for 8 fucking licenses. That's 10,000 they picked. Now, this is it. It's 10,000
per license.
Let's say you wanted to have a lounge, that's 10 G's. But if you wanted to have delivery for it, that's another 10 G's.
Everything.
If you wanted
retail.
And you could get up to like 4 or 5 different things. So think about it. Not out of 320, not every motherfucker just did one. Okay. People did a couple. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about 500. That, what was it? Is that 5 million or whatever it is? It's like $5 million. For 8 applications that might have been like 100 G's worth, you know, of what they actually really would have given out to. So imagine that they already know that they just got to pocket millions on people dreaming.
How is it not refundable?
Because you have to pay. That's the license. That's the application fee
for them to review your
license.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, your application.
And read it and make sure it's this or whatever.
Give me that job. I wish I got some shit. Review a damn license. How big is the application? Is it a novel?
50 pages. It's 50 pages, but
25 pages.
But listen,
design,
that's the nominal fee, because then you have to pay for the application. And sure. I know people that have paid $250,000 for the application.
We paid 50.
You paid 50 to get your application done?
Well, to have it done by the lawyers that we had it done. Yeah, right. They charge us 50 G's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're paying all that, and again, this is no guarantee that you will get a license. That's just the application process.
Then that gets to the social equity part.
Right.
How can someone in a social equity background that doesn't have that kind of funding, unless they're, what, like you said, made as a pawn or a slave in a way?
Well, no, and this is how it's structured. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, they're allowing investors to partner, but the percentage is 51% to the social equity applicant and 49% to the investor.
Wow.
But people are greedy, so they don't want that. They sure. don't want to give up 51%, but those are the rules. So that's why they're trying to get creative, and they're trying to create situations where they can just pay off that social equity applicant.
Sure. Wow.
And
it's
done.
It's nuts.
No, it's crazy. It's insane, and it's just not okay. And it's, you know, people are just, I'm just seeing the worst of people right now.
So, just out of curiosity, because I've just kind of been thinking about this on my mind. When you went through the 8-year reign and you went to jail, you actually started to read, right?
Yep.
You taught yourself. And how long did it take, like, to figure it out?
2 weeks.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yep.
Are you serious?
Yep.
So, literally, and what age were you?
You said 28.
At 28 years old, you finally had something click in your head. You were determined. You wanted to fucking teach yourself how to read. And you did it in 2 weeks. That is awesome.
Well, the desire was there.
Isn't that amazing?
Before that happened, I saw no reason to read. Because
then what made you have the reason at that point? What gave you that determination? What happened in jail at that time that made you say, I'm going to fucking do this? There had to be something.
The way out of jail was through the law library.
Okay. The way out of jail was, I want to fucking read so I can go to the law library and figure shit out.
Correct.
Get out of here. That's awesome.
So now the reason I read is so that I can get out of the ghetto. Or I can help the ghetto, either one.
And if you had to give that advice out, that would be probably the most important thing you would put out there?
Absolutely. One of the most important things. I mean, we got to become critical thinkers, you know.
Yes.
Most of us don't do critical thinking. We just basically go along to get along.
Sure.
And whatever the mass is doing, that's what we do.
And you feel this new technology and everybody having such access to iPads and this and that, do you feel like that's going to make it harder or easier for people?
Well, it's really made it easier because the information is at your fingertip. You know, back when I was coming up, if you didn't have a parent or uncle or somebody that had some sense, you couldn't get it. But now you can just literally pick it up on the internet and watch, you know, some of the smartest people in the world talk, and you listen to them and pay attention to what they're doing.
Sure.
Now you can follow procedures.
To read is one thing, okay? To then go into the law library and try to understand law, which most people, even who can fucking read,
right.
you know, can't do that. You started doing that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And did you find trying to understand the law difficult?
At first I did. It was a different language.
Yeah, and was it really frustrating? Were you like, fuck it, sometimes thought maybe you can't do this, this is too much for me?
I don't really get frustrated.
Okay.
You know, I'm a person that can control my frustration.
Throughout your whole life.
My anger.
Nice.
You know,
okay.
I don't lose control, you know.
Sure.
I found out when you lose control, you're vulnerable.
Okay.
To whatever else is around you.
Sure.
I understand that I am the master of my environment and that I can't control the things around me, but I first must control myself.
That's important. Controlling yourself and being happy with yourself, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, happy with yourself, then you're really in trouble.
But let's be honest. A lot of people deep down inside out there are not happy with themselves.
Well,
for one reason or another.
Well, you know, we've been taught that material things is what dictate who we are.
Sure.
You know, if you got a pair of, you know, in the ghetto, if you got a pair of the latest Michael Jordan tennis shoes, or you're driving around in a Maserati, you're good. If you can wear a gold chain.
Sure.
And these are the things that they identify as giving them
like their self-esteem.
A level of success.
Yeah, a mm-hmm. level of success. You know, with me, I'm totally the opposite. I believe that my motivation should come from the inside.
That's great. If we're getting a little bit towards the end, do you have any way, if people wanted to reach out, Instagram,
absolutely,
Facebook, any
absolutely.
Type of things like that?
They can get me on Facebook at Freeway Ricky Ross. They can get me on Instagram and Twitter at Freeway Ricky. They can order my book, Freeway Rick Ross, The Untold Autobiography. You can get that at freewayrickross.com.
And you wrote that?
I wrote it while I was in prison. I'm a best-selling author.
I love it. That's fucking cool.
Also, he has a movie on Netflix too. So,
oh yeah, I got a documentary. I have the number one documentary on Netflix right now. Freeway cracking the system.
Freeway cracking the system.
I'm killing Netflix right now.
That's good, man. Give me five, bro. Shout out, bro. I feel good for you.
No doubt. Thanks for having me on the show.
And Bo, shout out yourself.
Yeah, definitely. You can go to the Indica, which is thendica.org. So it's .org, not .com. And definitely go to our website, become a member. We have free memberships. We'd like to, you know, have you participate in the industry, whatever we can do to help. We have educational platforms. We have resources. We have a big event coming October 27th. It's going to be a diversity educational business summit and expo. So we'd like to definitely see you out there.
Absolutely.
Bring the
sure.
live, yeah.
Yeah, we're
going
to come
bring
live.
Your live
absolutely.
Set.
Absolutely.
You know?
Definitely. That'd be a
you
lot of
Michael
fun.
Michael have to come out.
Yeah. Yeah,
but, yeah, definitely. And thank you for having us. I mean, this is awesome.
Yeah, thank you so
no
much.
No doubt. No doubt. And investors, too. Holler at us.
Yeah,
oh,
definitely.
Absolutely. Is it towards... your own brand? Do you ever think about doing your own?
I'm doing my own brand. I'm gonna I'm going all in.
All in.
I'm gonna be hiring people.
You all heard it.
You're looking for a job? Holler at your boy.
He's going legitimate.
No
right?
doubt.
For
no
sure.
doubt.
For sure. For sure. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show and everything. And it was a pleasure. And everyone out there listening to Purple Haze Radio, wherever you guys are out in your cars and listening all over the world, check out all the different cannabis talk shows. Live DJ sets that we have from featured DJs from all over the world. 27 music zones, because stoners like all kinds of music, so and they're all different types of generations. And catch our live concerts we have during the oil hour at 7:10 during the 7 o'clock oil hour on Pacific time every single night. And then on Saturdays and Sundays at 10 a.m., we do a few more concerts. And then check out all the great cannabis talk shows. Check us out on purplehaze-radio.com and check out our radio schedule and all our different talk shows. Or download the app, Dash Radio, and tell your friends to download it or check it out on dashradio.com. You guys have a wonderful and blessed day. And just remember, no matter how your day is going, when you wake up in the morning or your day's rough and maybe a family member or a friend or a boss is really pissing you off, just remember, no matter what, you'll have that time when you're going to take a break, go home, chill a little bit, and then take out some of that medicine and feel a little bit good. My name is Andrew Pizzicalis. I'm the CEO of Purple Haze Properties and Purple Haze Radio. Peace.
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 You're live on Purple Haze Radio.